tuned in order for human beings to exist. What if chance had nothing to do with it? The best answer so far. An attempt has been made to explain the why of fine-tuning through the anthropic principle. The term first appeared in 1972 at a conference celebrating the 500th anniversary of the birth of Copernicus. The name is derived from anthropos, the Greek word for human. The relevance of Copernicus is that a planetary system where the Earth revolves around the Sun takes away the central position of human beings in creation. One of the main authors of the anthropic principle, astrophysicist Brandon Carter, declared, "Although our situation is not necessarily central, it is inevitably privileged to some extent." His assertion was either a breakthrough or an outrage, depending on your beliefs. Returning human beings to a privileged place in a cosmos billions of light years in size was bold, if nothing else. For a calm description of what the anthropic principle implies, we turn again to physicist and mathematician Sir Roger Penrose. In his much-respected book, The Emperor's New Mind, Concerning Computers, Minds, and the Laws of Physics, 1989, Penrose says that the argument for giving human beings a privileged position is useful to explain why the conditions happen to be just right for the existence of intelligent life on the Earth at the present time. Despite the allegiance of physics to randomness, Penrose points to striking numerical relations that are observed to hold between the physical constants, the gravitational constant, the mass of the proton, the age of the universe, etc. A puzzling aspect of this was that some of the relations hold only at the present epoch in Earth's history, so we appear, coincidentally, to be living at a very special time. Give or take a few million years. Being here, we look around and find that the cosmos led to our existence. A calm tone is necessary at this point, because on the fringes of the discussion are creationists who read the Bible literally, ready to pounce, claiming that physics now supports their belief that God gave man dominion over the earth, exactly as the book of Genesis teaches. Any such suggestion that human beings are divinely favored in the evolution of the cosmos is scientific heresy. But the anthropic principle isn't about having a religious agenda. It works from a remarkable fact that's hard to explain. Intelligent life now exists on Earth, namely us, and we are capable of measuring the constants that gave rise to intelligent life. Is this more than a coincidence? An analogy may help. Imagine that jellyfish are intelligent and want to know what the ocean is made of. Jellyfish scientists analyze the ocean's chemical composition, and they make a surprising observation. The chemicals inside our bodies exactly match the chemicals in seawater. The match is too perfect to be just a coincidence. There must be another explanation. They'd be right, because the reason that seawater and the liquid inside a jellyfish match is that evolution made it so. Jellyfish wouldn't be alive without the sea. Do humans matter that much? The anthropic principle gained support among scientists who felt uncomfortable with coincidence piling upon coincidence. Yet it gives us no definitive explanations that fit current science. As with jellyfish, it could be that evolution created a match between the human brain and the constants in the universe. Or not. They might match for some other reason. Or the seeming match could be illusory, and we will discover important kinds of mismatches if we keep looking. There are large areas of controversy about how accidental anything in the cosmos actually is. But at least the ice has been broken. The total lock on randomness has been broken intellectually. The recent discoveries of planets orbiting around distant sun-like stars has boosted randomness, the notion being that there may be millions upon millions of planets potentially capable of sustaining life. If so, then Earth would be lucky in the cosmic lottery, but not unique or perhaps all that special. Copernicus may have the last laugh. To bolster its credibility, the anthropic principle has been expressed in strong and weak versions. The weak anthropic principle, WAP, tries to take any special dispensation out of the equation. It makes no claim that intelligent life on Earth was somehow the goal of cosmic evolution, starting with the Big Bang. WAP only says that the universe, if it is ever fully explained, must conform to life on Earth. Maybe the constants that we have been measuring contain some kind of wiggle room, so that our knowledge, while correct, is limited to our perspective. Imagine a bee that can only collect pollen from pink flowers. The weak bee principle would say that no matter how you talk about the evolution of flowers, a connection must be made between the pink ones and bees. The fact that there are lots of other flowers in other colors can be explained any way you want without worrying about bees. The strong anthropic principle, SAP, makes a bolder claim that there can be no knowable universe without human beings in it. The evolution of the cosmos must necessarily lead to us. Many physicists squirm at this suggestion, which smacks of metaphysics. One mischievous commentator went one step further with a so-called very, very strong anthropic principle, which he stated as, "The universe came into existence so that I, personally, could argue cause and effect on this web page, specifically." This might seem like a joke, taking SAP to a ridiculous extreme. But if the universe must accommodate human beings, there is no logical reason why it can't accommodate this very moment in time. Cause and effect doesn't have a mind of its own. If the constants lead to deterministic outcomes, for example, dropping a ball always leads to the balls falling to Earth, it's just as easy for a moment in time, pick any one you want, to be predetermined. Now you can see why a belief in cause and effect is one of the core beliefs that have broken down in the post-quantum era. It just won't do to say that the Big Bang inevitably led to this very moment. The words that you are now listening to, the ham sandwich or cup of tea at your elbow, and the spelling of your last name. Strict cause and effect would mean that your next thought or the next word out of your mouth was predetermined 13.7 billion years ago. By turning strict cause and effect into probabilities, quantum mechanics ease this difficulty. We now live with soft cause and effect, you might say. Every event emerges from a set of probabilities, not an ironclad chain reaction. Still, the mystery of the fine-tuned universe hasn't gone away. Probabilities can tell you the likelihood of an electron appearing at point A in time and space. It has nothing to say about how electrons came into existence as part of a fine-tuned universe. By analogy, if you have a friend with a vocabulary of 30,000 words, and you also know how often he uses each word, you can use probability to calculate the likelihood that his next word will be jazz. Maybe he's not a jazz enthusiast, so the likelihood is very small, with a probability of 1 in 1,867,054. That's a powerful degree of precision. But you still have no way of explaining why he chose that word any time that jazz escapes his lips. On a large scale, your skill at probabilities can't explain why language came into existence among primitive societies hundreds of thousands of years ago. No matter whether the anthropic principle is weak or strong, it allows Earth to stop being a random speck afloat in the cosmic ocean. It's hard to get past the proposition that the constants of nature have their particular values because the universe is built to allow for life to develop. If you've ever idled away an afternoon building a house of cards, you know that the slightest slip in one card leads to the collapse of the whole structure. Imagine, instead of a house with 52 cards, that you are building human DNA, which has 3 billion base pairs, the chemical rungs spaced along the twisted ladder of the double helix. Consider that the process for constructing human DNA took some 3.7 billion years from the first prototypes of life on Earth, and 10 billion years of cosmic existence to get to that point. How many slips could randomly occur along the way, causing DNA's house of cards to collapse? Too many to calculate. Your genes were inherited from your parents, but in the process of transmitting them, about 3 million irregularities in the form of mutations occurred on average. These random alterations in DNA, along with mutations caused by X-rays, cosmic rays, and other aspects of the environment, cast huge doubts about life as an accidental creation. The rate of random mutations is statistically verifiable. In fact, this is the main way that we can trace where human genes traveled after the first band of our human ancestors migrated out of Africa 200,000 years ago. The mutations in their DNA serve as a kind of clock with which we can trace their path. So, randomness has powerful arguments in its favor, while at the same time, statistics also undermine randomness. Given how often DNA could have lost its way over 3.7 billion years. Yet all these slips were avoided, and this fact muddies the waters if you want to turn randomness into the only force at work. Life is poised on the cusp of order and disorder. Whatever else it says, fine-tuning underscores how mysteriously the two are tangled. The cosmic body. For a growing number of physicists, the fine-tuning problem can be solved only by accepting that the entire cosmos is a single, continuous entity, working in seamless harmony, like the human body. Everyone accepts that individual cells in the heart, liver, brain, and so on, are linked to the activity of the entire body. If you look at a cell in isolation, its relationship to the whole is lost. All you see are chemical reactions swirling in, out, and through the cell. What you cannot see is that these reactions do two things simultaneously. At the local level, they keep the individual cell alive, while at the holistic level, they keep the entire body alive. One renegade cell that makes a break on its own can become malignant. In the relentless pursuit of its own interests, dividing endlessly and killing other cells and tissues that stand in its way, the malignant cell becomes a cancerous tumor. The breakdown of one cell's loyalty to the whole body is ultimately futile. The cancer meets destruction at the same moment the body dies. Did the universe learn to avoid destruction eons ago? Is fine-tuning a cosmic safeguard that human beings are meant to respect if we hope to survive in the long run? Let's return to creation stories and myths and look at these questions from their perspective. Myths issue such warnings, beginning long before the chaos threatened by terrorists, hackers, and ecological destruction. In the medieval Grail legends, faith was the invisible glue that held the world together. Sin was the cancer that could destroy it. When the Grail Knights set out to locate the cup that captured the blood that ran from Christ's side on the cross, the landscape was gray and dying. Nature's distress reflected human sin. The Grail was a real object, not just a symbol of salvation, and so it was understandable to a population that had almost no learning. In many ways, faith was an invisible link with the Creator. If the Grail could be held up before the people's eyes, that link would prove that God hadn't abandoned them, and the natural order would be upheld. A single isolated object reverberated through an entire religion, one might say an entire worldview. Another quip from Sir Arthur Eddington applies here. When the electron vibrates, the universe shakes. Everything in the cosmos is knit together as perceived by the human brain, because the same reality is at work. If there is another reality out there, beyond human perception, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't exist. One colorblind person doesn't make colors unreal. there are enough people who can see colors to verify that they exist. But if all people were colorblind, the existence of color would not be perceived by our brains. Humans don't happen to see the wavelengths of infrared and ultraviolet light that lie beyond the ability of our eyes. We can confirm their existence only by using instruments that are designed to detect those wavelengths. When the darkness of the universe contains no light or measurable radiation, reality becomes much more like a radio band, where we can pick up only one station, the one we recognize as our universe. Looking back at the early universe, during the phase when atoms began to appear, quantum theory holds that every particle of matter was balanced by a particle of antimatter. Potentially, they could have annihilated each other, making the life of the cosmos a very short story. But as it happens, a phrase you're growing used to, there was a tiny fraction more matter than antimatter, calculated at around 1 part per billion. This was precisely enough to allow all the visible matter in creation to escape annihilation, giving rise to the present universe. A side mystery, flatness. Fine-tuning, when broken down into constants, looks abstract and mathematical. But as with every cosmic riddle, there is visible evidence all around us in physical form. A spectacular example is known as the flatness problem, a side mystery that deepens the main mystery of fine-tuning. Pushing the limits as close to the beginning of creation as possible, great strides were made in the inflationary model discussed in the last chapter. The generally accepted version of this model was devised by theoretical physicist Alan Guth at Cornell in 1979, published in 1981. According to Guth's description, the universe began to expand not quite exactly at the instant of the Big Bang, but a tiny fraction of a second after it. The evidence for the early universe inflating with remarkable speed comes from various clues. One is the near uniformity of the radiation that emerged during the Big Bang and continues to pervade the universe today. Another is the near flatness of space. Flatness is a technical term in physics that refers to the curvature of the universe and the distribution of matter and energy in it. Newton developed a theory of gravity, treating it as a force, which is only